How can you achieve and maintain business growth? Harvard Business School Executive Education is now accepting applications for a new program, Driving Profitable Growth. Taking place in Boston from October 25th through the 28th, this program focuses on business expansion and organizational growth strategies that can lead your company into the future. Learn more about this three-day program for senior leaders by visiting hbs.me/growth. That's hbs.me/growth.
Hey there, welcome back to the Locked On Celtics podcast here on the Podcast Network. We are the Rain and Jays, John Corrales and Jay King, back with another power-packed episode. Thank you for downloading us, listening to us, live streaming us wherever it is on iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher. We definitely want to thank you for making us part of your daily routine. And we wanted to make sure that you, as part of that routine, are also checking out the rest of the network, Locked On NBA. Get your fill of a lot of what the rest of the league is talking about. Locked On Fantasy as you get ready for the upcoming fantasy basketball season. And really, you should subscribe to the rest of the teams in the network, because as the Celtics go through the season, you can download what they're talking about and get a sense of what we face and what their fans are thinking of. And so you could really get a nice little rivalry with all of the teams that we face. So the whole Locked On Network is great. Definitely check those guys out. But we are here to talk about the Celtics. And amazingly, they still, Jay, keep doing things that we can talk about, like Brad Stevens and Doc Rivers getting together for a pretty cool event.
Yeah. I think it's awesome that Doc Rivers comes all the way across the country from Los Angeles, because he believes in the ABCD Foundation and the Hoop Dreams specifically, which I believe helps young students through school, and the fact that he believes so much in that foundation and cares so much about it, that to this day, you know, he lives in Los Angeles, or lives in probably Orlando still, works in Los Angeles, and comes out to Boston for this event. It's really neat, I think, that he cares so deeply about that. And they have Bob Ryan there, Jackie McMullen, a lot of big names. So it is really cool. And then he convinced Brad Stevens to do it too. And more fun for us, they talked about things. There's a little news coming out of there. So I'm all for anything where news comes out.
At this time of year, anything that gives us nuggets of news is great. And we're going to be talking about that. Brad Stevens talked about Evan Turner. We talked about Gerald Green. Doc talked about Al Horford's impact, and even a little bit of Paul Pierce and Ray Allen. So we'll get to all of those things. I will add that this was a cool event, this ABCD Hoop Dreams event. It's not something that you could buy tickets to, but if it was, I bet you could find those tickets on SeatGeek. And let me talk to you a little bit about this. Buying tickets online for sports and concerts is a really confusing process for a long time. It's been hard to find the best deal for a game or a show that's not just for sports, anything. It's been hard to find the best deal because none of those older ticket sites want to change that. They want to keep everything the same. SeatGeek, though, is different. They've come along and created this amazing app and website that makes it easier than ever for fans to buy and sell tickets. Now, I have the SeatGeek app. It's on my phone. And I already talked about how I've used it to get into some of these games on the road. I'm going on vacation next weekend. I'm going to New Orleans. I'm using the SeatGeek app to cruise through the New Orleans music scene to see what kind of shows I want to get into. It's really easy. It's the first place I go to game or a concert. So remember, SeatGeek, now it's designed to make life easier. It does all the price comparison for you. It searches all these multiple ticket sites to make sure you get the best possible deal. They do all of the work. You sit back, you save time, you save money. They want to get you the most bang for your buck. They give you a grade. When you go on there, you'll see a grade to know whether you're getting a good value or not. And you'll be able to see whether the ticket that you're getting is underpriced or maybe you should wait. That's what makes this thing so great. And here's what makes it even better. Because you, the listener, get $20 back after you make your first SeatGeek purchase. This is all you have to do. download the SeatGeek app, go to the settings tab, click the add a promo. Okay. Under the settings tab, click add a promo. You will put in LO Celtics. Make your ticket purchase. SeatGeek sends you $20 back after you've made your first ticket purchase. It's that simple. You just got to download the SeatGeek app, enter the promo LO Celtics, and you're all set. $20 back after your first ticket purchase. And you could do that for any of these games. You could do it for when the Celtics play the Clippers and Brad Stevens and Doc Rivers get to see each other again after this ABCD Hoop Dreams event. So back to that. Brad Stevens.
First of all, that was a money ad read, money segue.
You like that?
And don't say we never did anything for you. We're out here saving you $20, saving you money and entertaining you all at once.
Here's what you do: you get that $20 back. You go to a Celtics game, then you go across the street to Sully's. You get a few of those cheap beers. Next thing you know, you go to a game. Great deal through SeatGeek. You get four beers at Sully's afterwards. That's a night.
There you go. Boom.
So Brad was talking about Evan Turner and made some interesting comments, stuff that we've talked about a little bit, but he said specifically about losing Evan Turner, and I'll read the quote directly. That's going to be a tough role to fill. He was a heck of a player for us. He made huge plays at the end of games. He made big shots. His shooting percentages were not always great. I love that he's kind of slipped that in there. His shooting percentages were not always great.
I have to acknowledge that.
Right. It's not like you got to like, I have to say it. But then he said, when the game was on the line and the clock was winding down, you felt like it had a good chance of going in. He made free throws late in games, and he guarded two or three positions. So, and then he added, time will tell. We'll find out. We've got a lot of guys who will get an opportunity to step up and fill his void, but it is a void. So he's right. And I know this is a big evolution in how I looked at Evan Turner, but by the end of last season, this was absolutely correct that once David Lee was gone and the mid-range was kind of freed up for Evan Turner to kind of occupy that space, he did the most with it. And that's something that the Celtics are going to miss, that he was able to get himself into positions, and he was really one of two guys last year who could create his own shot. Now, this year we have Isaiah Thomas, the other guy who could create his own shot, and the rest of the guys kind of have to feed off of that. So who can be that guy that will get the opportunity to sort of play the Evan Turner role, or do they just do something else and not have that specific role be there for them this year?
Well, I think they're going to have to change roles. Like, there's nobody who's going to play like Evan Turner did. And that's not necessarily a bad thing. Like, he does a lot of things on the court, but you can have a player that's as good or better than he is without doing the same things. Now, the funny thing is, you know, you talk about the bad shooting percentages, and obviously he wasn't a good three-point shooter. You would hope they would become a better three-point shooting team by losing him. But it's like, well, Marcus Smart might get more minutes, and oh yeah, like, he's just as bad a three-point shooter, except he shoots a lot more, so it's even more destructive. You've got Terry Rozier, who shot really well in summer league, but he's never proven himself as a shooter. You've got Jaylen Brown, who shooting is one of the things that would be one of his flaws right now. And then Gerald Green, who's like as streaky as it gets, and you never know what you're going to get from him from night to night. So it's like you would hope that they would become a better outside shooting team by losing Evan Turner, but not necessarily. Now, I do think Marcus Smart moving more to point guard, I think he'll be more comfortable as a playmaker. I think the fact that he won't be sitting on the wing for so many spot-up jumpers will probably be a good thing. I don't think he'll shoot nearly as badly as he did last year. He shot a lot better the year before, like regression to the mean, all that. He's a better shooter than the historically bad shooting season he had last year. That's not saying much, but I don't think he'll be that bad again. So we'll see how they fill that role. It'll be interesting to see how they morph. And I do think that Al Horford will be a big help from the playmaking sense, because now you can run pick and rolls, and if you hit Al Horford, that's like having another playmaker.
Yeah.
He's that good a passer, and he's so much better roller, and he requires so much more attention in the middle of the lane than a guy like Jarrett Sullinger did, that'll open up a lot of things for a lot of people without adding another quote-unquote point guard to handle the ball.
Yeah, the one thing that I'm just kind of curious about and one of the weaknesses that the Celtics might have is who can really control things without – let me ask it this way. Which non-Isaiah Thomas player can really control things? Because you could put Evan Turner out there with Isaiah Thomas and run Isaiah Thomas off the ball. That was one of my favorite things that the Celtics could do, and it was a nice option that they had because running Isaiah Thomas off of picks and freeing him up changes the offense up enough a little where you can't just blitz him on a pick and roll. So you run a pick and roll with Al Horford, and you just blitz Isaiah Thomas and get the ball out of his hands. Now, Horford is good enough to take advantage of that, but when you had Evan Turner out there, he could at least control things a little bit, and Marcus Smart's just not there yet. Not to say he might not get there by the end of the season, but we still haven't seen him do that. And like you said, Rozier too.
Yeah, those two guys. And I can remember there was a spurt against the Nets, and granted it was the Nets, and they were terrible. There was a spurt against the Nets where the Celtics moved Isaiah Thomas off the ball, and Marcus Smart, not Evan Turner, I forget why, was the one handling the ball and pick and rolls. And they found Isaiah Thomas for like two or three straight threes, and boom, like 20-point run later, they were way, way, way in the lead. So I don't know. I think Marcus Smart has another level of playmaking to get to. I don't know what that level is. I don't know how good it will be. But he showed spurts with it, and I think the more he does it, the more comfortable he'll be with it. And he'll get a lot more chances this year because, as you said, when Isaiah Thomas was on the bench, the ball was almost always in Evan Turner's hands. Now it's going to be in Smart's hands. It's going to be in Terry Rozier's hands. They're going to have to do different things, and that's really the biggest question mark, I think, about the Celtics right now. You look at their team, and rebounding looks like a weakness, but that second playmaker and the second unit point guard, that's like their biggest question mark. That's the thing. I have no clue what that will really look like. I don't know whether Terry Rozier is ready for it. He looked ready in summer league, absolutely, but you don't know until someone's in a real game whether that will translate. And Marcus Smart, same thing. I think he has another level of playmaking, but who knows what that is. So there's a lot to not really worry about yet, but we'll learn a lot about that throughout preseason and in the early parts of the regular season.
There are a lot of questions. Hey, before we continue, I want to make sure that I mention that this is coming up, which I'm sure if you're listening, you've seen the headline. Jeff Clark from Celtics Blog is on the show later on. Just want to make sure that that's out there because I forgot to mention that for some reason. I was so worked up about actual news.
That's your competitor, man. That's your competitor. You can't be hyping
a
competitor.
I used to think that about other sites like Celtics Town, but not Celtics Blog.
See, the great thing about the blogosphere is that you can all help each other.
Yeah.
And like a lot of people don't understand that. Like websites can all help each other and be mutually beneficial to each other and drive traffic to each other's sites, and you can really help each other out. You don't have to necessarily be competitors. You can all thrive together. So,
yeah. And I totally agree that I think that's been one of the best parts about being a blogger is that there isn't necessarily the same competition. Now, my other life, I'm in the media, and there is a direct competition. We're always worried about what the other guy's going to do. But
gotta get those ratings up.
Yeah, right. And it's just a big competition for eyeballs. But in the blogosphere, everybody's just so much more chill about things that it's been great. So and somebody like Jeff Clark, who's been around forever, he's the blog father. I mean, he's been doing it for a very long time, longer than me even. So I'm excited to have him on the show later. I know you had the conversation with him. And it's going to be great, but that's coming up. Another guy, when we're talking about the Celtics and shooting and playmaking and scoring and all that stuff, Gerald Green, that Brad Stevens also mentioned about how Gerald Green scares him. And so, which he should, I think, from both sides of the ball. So And Gerald Green is an interesting case because, like you said, he's a guy that can be super streaky. He can get hot. He has the ability to hit from three. And obviously he can jump through the roof still. I mean, he's going to be a guy that's throwing down pump reverses when he's 65. So he's just a freak athlete. And you can envision him doing some positive things for the Celtics. You can also envision him getting cut. And so I don't know. I'm kind of really curious, like the Gerald Green signing and what he does during training camp is a really interesting storyline to look forward to.
Yeah. And I think the hope, like the real hope, is that the Brad Stevens pixie dust comes through. You know, he made Evan Turner, really, Evan Turner should pay him half of his next.
He should give Brad Stevens an equal agent's cut. Like whatever that 4% that he gives his agent, he should just give 4% on top of that to Brad Stevens, because there's no doubt that Brad Stevens has increased his value by much more than that.
Yeah, and I mean, you look past that to Jordan Crawford, another like flawed, skilled and talented
former player of the week, Jordan Crawford,
former Eastern Conference player of the week, exactly. So there's a history of Brad Stevens helping these guys who kind of have reputations that precede them, and Gerald Green is one of those guys. Gerald Green has. He does a lot of things well, but he also does a lot of things that make you shake your head. And if Brad Stevens can maximize those strengths while kind of hiding over some of the weaknesses, like, say, defense or shot selection and
or everything else,
general awareness, then you know, the Celtics might have a valuable scorer off the bench. And as you said, like, I would be surprised if he's cut just because they just gave him guaranteed money. But, you know, if James Young comes into camp and looks pretty good, it's not completely out of the question. And I also wouldn't be surprised if he plays a regular role. Like, that's not out of the question either. It's just, it all depends on how he looks in the Celtics system. In the last 2 years, he has slipped. His numbers have slipped. His efficiency has slipped. He hasn't been the same player he was a couple of seasons ago when he averaged 15.8 points for the Phoenix Suns. So if they can get him back close to that level, close to the 40% three-point shooter he used to be, that's a huge, huge thing for a team that hasn't shot three-pointers well over the last few years.
Okay, yeah, I agree. We'll table this Gerald Green discussion because we're going to have a lot of time to talk about him. We don't want to get too much into repeating ourselves. But Doc Rivers had a couple of interesting comments from the same event, saying things that we have said here before. First thing, Al Horford is going to make Boston a much more desirable place for free agents, which...
Yep. He's their Ray Allen.
Yeah, right.
But he's their Ray Allen.
Right. And so they need to... Right. They need to get the other two big pieces, but... Yeah, and I know Doc can be a little bit of a politician. He's back in Boston, so he's going to say things that he's going to throw you that red meat every once in a while. But he's not lying. Now, Al Horford definitely makes things more attractive. If you're a free agent and you look at the situation, what do free agents want? First of all, they want money. The Celtics will have that. Everybody will have that. Second of all, they want a good situation. And the Celtics have a good situation. They've got a great coach. They got a great front office, great ownership, great team. And an opportunity for whoever that player is to come in and be an immediate impact player on it and raise them to a championship level. So, and if all of that ends up being in a nice weather place, that's a nice bonus. But I don't think a guy's going to pick a team like Miami, which is going to be struggling for a little bit here. And especially if the Chris Bosch situation gets a little dicey, they're not going to go to South Beach over Boston just because it's sunny and you get the beach. I mean, maybe some guys will, but those aren't the types of guys you want. You want a guy like, I'll just say Russell Westbrook, not him because I know he's just resigned and everything, but a guy at that level, he'd rather stay in Oklahoma City. he could have easily gone to LA and been a Laker, but he saw a better opportunity in Oklahoma City, and he's kind of sticking with that. So
I will say he saw an opportunity to get $9 extra million this season. So
which goes back to my first point. Yep. Free agents want money.
Money.
First and foremost, they want the money. So if Milwaukee's got money to spend and the Lakers and the Heat don't, then guess what? Milwaukee's a free agent destination, and Milwaukee's no kind of destination otherwise. I'm just throwing that out there. So, but Al Horford
Sorry,
makes
Milwaukee
things better.
Listeners.
Sorry, Milwaukee. You know that that's true. But look, I'm going on vacation. I'm not going to Milwaukee. And if I go to Milwaukee, it's going to go to a basketball game, and then I'm going to leave Milwaukee. So, sorry. So, Al Horford does make things a lot more interesting for free agents around here. A potential free agent, you mentioned Ray Allen. Doc touched on Ray Allen. Ray Allen is what, 40?
41, I believe.
41.
I love that Doc said he's in top five players in the NBA as far as shape-wise. And I'm sure that's an exaggeration. Like, he can't still be in top five shape in the NBA. Like, he hasn't played a game in 2 years.
If you lined up the NBA players in a 400-person wide baseline and had them run up and down for that Celtics drill, where would Ray Allen, would Ray Allen be at the top of the list of guys who could finish that?
I don't know, but if you had them do like a long distance bike ride, I bet he'd be up there.
Right.
That dude, and I love that he's just in retirement or quasi-retirement since he hasn't really retired yet officially. I love that he's just staying in great shape. Like, he doesn't know what to do if he's not staying in shape. He probably hasn't had like a single cheeseburger. He hasn't had any cookies. Like, he skips cake on his birthday. That's just the type of guy he is. And it doesn't matter to him that his career has been
over
for 2 years.
It's over.
Yeah, you've got to think it's over. But every year he comes out and he's like, yeah, it might happen again.
Yeah.
What age? He's like the Brett Favre man. What age? At what age do people finally have to start being like, okay, Ray, like,
right,
we don't believe you anymore, man.
Right. I think realistically it's going to be like
2 years?
Two more years tops. Two more tops. But he's going to be the guy that will be in like MTV's celebrity basketball game, like dunking on Justin Bieber or something. You know, this is a dude like while Gerald Green is dunking at 65 years old, Ray Allen's going to be sitting there with like 3% body fat and abs at 65 years old, still like riding his bike 40 miles or whatever.
I want to see him on the senior PGA Tour.
Yeah, he's a pretty good golfer.
He's a hell of a golfer.
Yeah.
That would be fun. I'm in for the Ray Allen golf experience.
Yeah. I want to see.
The only way I'd ever go to a senior PGA Tour event.
I'd like to see him and Michael Jordan play. I want to know who's better because they're both like super serious and super competitive.
Definitely much better. But
I can't confirm or deny that. I have no idea.
No, Ray's like legit. He's as good as it gets. Not, I mean, he's not PGA Tour level, but he's close.
Okay. All right.
Yeah.
Cool. Well, good for Ray Allen. He can play golf. While Paul Pierce, meanwhile, going back to the conversation, Paul Pierce, currently a Clipper, and Doc, again, this is like the second or third time he said it this summer, Paul Pierce has to retire a Celtic, which, duh. Yeah, of course he does. Of course he does. That's
Question. I was talking about this earlier with my roommate. Obviously, if the Celtics sign him for one day, they won't be able to have him play in a regular suit up for a regular season game. That's out of the question. Do you think it'd be cool to have him suit up for a preseason game and like either just go out there for layups or even have like a cameo appearance and just have like a thunderous ovation, whatever, if and when he retires? Would that be something that interests you? I kind of think that'd be cool, like one more chance to shoot on the Garden court.
Ah, man,
fans just go nuts.
It would be nice. I don't know if preseason's the way to do that, though. I know what you're saying. You can't
have a roster spot on him.
If the Celtics go into a season, let's say it's next season. Okay, this season I assume the scenario is he plays for the Clippers this season.
Yeah.
His contract is up after this season. And then the Celtics bring him back for the farewell. So the scenario is, if they have an open roster spot, let's say they come into camp and they have 13 guys and they just go into the regular season with 13 instead of 15 or 14 instead of 15.
They'll never do that.
No, it's true.
And they'll have tons of draft picks again.
Yeah. Okay. You know what? I think it would be cool. It would be cool to have him do it one more time, to put on that uniform one more time, put him in the starting lineup, give him.
And then have him play like a couple plays and then just take him out and let the building go
completely nuts. Yeah.
It would be unbelievable. It would be like no ovation anyone's had since, what, Bird's retirement?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, easily. Easily. And it'd be like the ovation he got when he came back, when he first left, when he went to Brooklyn. Can you imagine? And they would never be able to keep this secret. This is where social media and everything would be like, it ruins the surprise. But imagine if they could keep that quiet, and it wasn't on like the wires. And
no, they'd want to sell the hell out of that. They would want that building packed.
I would love to just be a surprise. I'd love for that to be a surprise. It'd be such a cool story. But
yeah.
No, I agree with you. I can be on board with that. Bring them back. You know, you have like 18, 19, 20 spots, whatever it is. Give him one of those spots. Start him. Give him a couple of plays. Pull him out. Garden goes nuts. At the end of the thing, he comes out and he says, "I'm retiring. I'm officially retiring as Celtic." And unlike other guys, he actually will have played again in that uniform, and he can do it post game and say, "I'm done." That would be really cool. That would be really cool. I'm on board with that.
Yeah, obviously, if he signs with the Celtics, I think people would understand he's going to retire. So just play that couple plays with the knowledge that he's going to retire.
Yeah,
and then just give him that booming ovation. Honestly, I was like you. I thought, you know what? It's preseason. Who cares? Whatever. Don't do that. It's Paul Pierce. Why do that for a preseason game? Whatever. That would be one of the coolest moments the Celtics could have over the next however many years. It would just be unbelievable for anyone there.
It'd be super cool. And it'd be great if they got him a shot at the elbow.
Oh, the step back from
the right elbow, step back. Oh, my God.
Yeah.
That'd just be, That'd just
although Jay Crowder would probably try to block it or like mark it would like foul him or something.
Oh, man. That would be amazing. And I think however Paul Pierce retires, it's going to be in Boston. And you know what the cool thing is about Paul Pierce is that I know he's an L.A. guy. He was born and raised there, you know. But even when you look at his – you see him posting workout videos – on Instagram or something, and he's got his Paul Pierce gear. It's in green and white. Like, he's just still all of his personal gear, his Nike stuff, his foundation stuff, it's all still green and white. It's awesome. He's such a Celtic. It's amazing.
Gotta have the green and white.
Okay. You know who's been green and white for a long time too?
Jeff Clark.
Jeff Clark has been.
There you go.
Jeff Clark has been around almost as long as Paul Pierce. He's been around for, God, he's going, what, like 12th, 13th year as a blogger? That's amazing. It's an amazing run. And I've been around for a while, right behind him, nipping on his heels. But Celtics Blog was the first one around. They were around like at the birth of the internet. I think I used to read them on like Netscape, like 10 browsers ago. There are people listening to this show that were born when Celtics Blog was starting. That's how long they've been around. Yeah. We got some young listeners.
Like you had to beg your mom to get off the phone so you could like
dial into AOL. Read Celtics blog.
And read Celtics blog, yeah.
Yeah. So, Jay, you got a chance to sit down with Jeff, whom I love. Jeff is seriously like a legitimately nice guy on top of everything. He's just always been super helpful on top of running an amazing blog that has grown by leaps and bounds and has become part of SB Nation and is really one of the leading places for Celtics fans to go for analysis and information and everything. So let's take a pause here from our show so we can listen to your conversation with Jeff Clark of Celtics Blog.
All right, so now we're here with Jeff Clark of Celtics Blog, who is kind of the godfather of all Celtics blogging. I believe he's been doing it since 2004. He is the guy who has been there through from probably like the Mark Blount and Gerald Green and Tony Allen days through the Big Three era and now to the Brad Stevens time. So I'm really excited to have Jeff on. I actually had the chance to work with him for a little while when I did some stuff for Celtics Blog probably 5 or 6 years ago now. Wow, time flies. But yeah, so Jeff, thank you for coming on, first of all.
Sure. Yeah, and first of all, I prefer the name Blogfather. So
Blogfather. There you go.
You may kiss the ring. You know.
See, we're the pod gods. I like the Blogfather. Okay, so back in 2004 when you started this, blogging wasn't even a thing. How did you get started in blogging?
Well, it's a long, boring story that I'll spare you with. But
it's interesting. No, this is interesting.
Well, basically, I just was, you know, writing a whole long emails to my friends who didn't care one lick about the Celtics and would write me one-liner reply saying, I don't care. and so at some point, someone said, hey, you should start a website. And, you know, I had a friend who knew a lot about HTML and Dreamweaver and Photoshop and things like that. And he showed me how easy it was to pick it up and to actually do it. So I said, you know, between me and another friend, we just started this website and we would, you know, write articles, post them onto these, you know, templates, upload the pages, link them to the front page and all this stuff that you used to have to do back in the day. And then, you know, fast forward a couple of years later, you know, blogger.com becomes invented. And I was just like, thank you. This is awesome. This is what I've wanted the whole time, is just to focus on writing and not have to worry about all this other junk. It was a good learning experience for me to do that. But at the same time, it was great to get back to focusing on what I wanted to do best, what I wanted to, you know, be what I was passionate about.
Yeah. And so I started blogging, I don't know how many years later, but the blogging stuff was around. I was just too stupid to know that I could do that. So I actually started a website kind of like you, and I was uploading every page, and I taught myself HTML code on the internet, which was terrible, terrible thing. And
I think it's a good skill to have, actually. So.
It definitely is. It has aided me a lot since then, but at the time, oh man, it was brutal. And it took so long to put those pages up. But yeah, like you, I just wanted to write about the Celtics. I loved it. And I never liked writing about anything else, but once I started doing it about the Celtics, I just really enjoyed it. What caused you to continue it for so long, I guess?
Well, no one told me to stop. And, you know, it was an outlet. You know, I had a somewhat boring job right out of college, and you know, I was using a very analytical part of my brain for that part of my life, and so I needed a creative outlet. And so I just sort of started writing, and I enjoyed the process of writing. I got a small, you know, audience of, you know, a little bit beyond, you know, my mother clicking on it once in a while, and a few people seemed to enjoy what I was doing, so that gave me a little bit more, you know, encouragement to keep going. And got kind of a big break when, you know, the Boston.com closed down their chat room, and I invited everybody to come over and use this chat room that I created, which, again, that's where the HTML served me well. As I was, you know, go out on the internet, find chat software, drop it into my HTML and say, hey, come on over here, you know, use this. And that created a little groundswelling of an audience that I had as a captive audience to read my ramblings on the front page while they did their chatting on the chat room. So kind of also created a forum for people to be able to talk back and forth. So from the early days, my focus was always on community. You know, my buzz phrase is, you know, content is king, but community is queen. You have to engage the audience and let them, you know, voice their voice. And it's amazing how much I've learned through that process by just listening to other people and listening to their feedback to my writings and things like that. So,
and for anyone who hasn't gone to the Celtics blog forums, it is incredible how many people go and stay constant with their updates. It's like everything is on there within minutes after it happens, and there's a discussion about it, and you're always in there. A lot of your other moderators are always in there. It's really a neat community, which speaks to you. What was this conversation is kind of going in a nerdy way. It's like a blogging nerd direction I've taken this, but I'm really interested by your history and all this time you've been doing it, and kind of how the blogging has evolved. What was the blogosphere like in those early days? I can't imagine there were too many other blogs out there when you started Celtics Blog.
Yeah, I mean, it was a little bit of the Wild Wild West atmosphere, but it was, at the same time, you could kind of reach out and talk to people. You could, you know, I was able to talk to people like J.E. Skeets and Henry Abbott of True Hoop and Tom Ziller of you know, Sacktown Royalty, and all those guys that are, you know, longtime bloggers and things like that. And I very much enjoyed the, camaraderie between various bloggers. And early on, I started these NBA previews where, you know, I said, hey, I don't know anything about the Bulls. I'm going to go ask the Bulls blogger to write a preview and read that and even post it on my site. I'm going to go ask, you know, Tom Ziller to write a preview about the Kings, because I know he knows them backwards and forwards. So, and let my readers get a feeling for who these other sites. You know, there's other passionate fans out there that know their team just as much as we know the Celtics. And so it was great seeing what their thoughts on that were. And yeah, I mean, it was early days. You could kind of do whatever, but at the same time, it was fun getting in there and proving yourself. I remember early on, I was able to get a press access from the Celtics, and that was, you know, fairly rare back in those days. And this was in the age of Rafe LaFrance and Ricky Davis and people like that.
The good old days.
Yeah, very much. And I remember, like, you know, walking around the locker room and seeing someone like Shira Springer. She looked at me like I had six heads. It was she's like, what is this thing that's walking around here, a blogger in the locker room? Were you kidding me? But I mean, that was the thing. It was like, I wanted to prove that I could be professional. I could do, you know, I could do this, and I could, you know, prove that bloggers are not just these, you know, kids in basements and stuff like that. You can actually do this for maybe not a living, but as something, as a real hobby, and be treated as a somewhat of an equal with the, you know, the scribes that are there every day. Now the other, the flip side of that process too, is that I got a lot more appreciation for what they do. You know, I was in there talking to Rafe LaFrance and asking him dumb questions and feeling like Chris Farley, being like, do you like stuff? And just not knowing what to ask them, and being able to see someone else do their job and do it really well. I just gained so much appreciation for these beat writers that have a largely thankless job, you know, following these teams around and tracking their every movement and reporting rumors and things like that, and stuff that, frankly, once I got to see how much work and how tough it was to do, essentially what you're doing right now, I figured, you know what? I really don't want to do that anymore. I like blogging. I like being an outsider. I like being a fan who says, you stink, you know, I like this move, and I like that move, and have, you know, no repercussions for me the next day in the locker room, you know?
Yeah, yeah. So I grew up a huge Celtics fan, and it's funny.
Really?
No
way.
So I never knew that you covered the team with a press pass for a little while. I know, obviously, that your site has press passes, but I never knew you did that. So my first time in the Garden, I can remember, I walked through the hallway to get to the press room, and I walked by Kevin McHale, who was calling the game at that point for ABC. This must have been, like, I don't know, 2009 or 2010?
Yeah.
When he was still doing TV. And so I walked right by him, and he was literally the first person I walked by, and I was like, oh, my God. Like, what have I gotten into? But I went into the locker room. I talked to Kevin Garnett, Ray Allen, Rasheed Wallace, and for some reason I wasn't starstruck. But then I saw Bob Ryan, and I swear to God, I started shaking, and I was like, oh, man.
Yeah, that's how I felt, too. Like, you know, the first time I met, like, Jackie McMullen, I was just like, I'm such a big fan. And, like, you know, I didn't care about the players, but, like, you know, and my quick story about Bob Ryan, first time I met him, I shook his hand, and I must have shook his whole body because he spilled coffee all over his arm. He was holding it in his other hand. I felt so bad. But he just knew so much about sports in general. There's a random game on, college football or something like that, and he knew all about it, and I had no idea what was going on. So, presence of greatness.
He is an encyclopedia. It's unbelievable. I sat next to him for the Clippers game this year, and it was a double overtime game, probably one of the best games of the year. And he watched it, honestly, like an 11 or 12-year-old. Like just so much excitement there. And still to this day, you know, he's covered the team for God knows how many years. He's been around this. He's seen it from the ground up. He should have lost some bit of that excitement along the way. Like but he didn't. There's
right.
Nothing that he lost, and it's unbelievable. And I really admire that about him. But did you have, like, a fun story from one of your first trips to the Garden where you were like, wow, I can't believe I'm doing this right now?
I mean, other than the ones that, you know, I shared, it was a lot of fun, you know, walking through the, you know, the backstage kind of area, you know, getting a feel for just how enormous these human beings are, you know, seeing someone like Brendan Haywood, who just towers over me, you know. And at some point, I remember meeting Chris Wilbon and David Aldridge, and I think it was someone else. But, you know, the thing that struck me about those guys is the personality you see on TV is exactly the personality they are in real life, which is just a big testament to them. I mean, they're just really legitimately nice guys who love sports. So it was fun, you know, chatting with them.
Yeah, definitely. Now, one thing about you that I've always admired is your site kind of serves as a springboard for a lot of young writers. Kevin O'Connor was just hired by The Ringer. Jimmy Toscano went to Comcast. Greg Payne for a while was at ESPN Boston. I worked for you, and shortly thereafter went to Mass Live. How do you, I guess, work with that talent? And how do you find guys like that and kind of help them along the path?
Well, I mean, I have a very much an open door policy. You know, if you show me that you have a passion for the sport and you have a passion for writing, have a little bit of talent in it and want to do this blogging thing, I'm ready to, you know, let you, you know, work on your craft with me and with Celtics Blog as a test, you know, a breeding ground for writers. And I like to try to help people in what they're doing. One thing that we've recently done, we hire an editor who, like, will actually go through and do the editing process and working with you and, you know, what is passive voice and how does it help you to, how do you avoid that when you're writing your article? I also started, you know, this last year, I started doing this thing I deemed Celtics Blog University, where I I teach classes, quote unquote, in which means I kind of teach people about, hey, when you write a heading, you want to make it SEO friendly, search engine optimization friendly. You want to be able to drive readers to the point in a fast way that's searchable and things like that. So, I mean, I just want to help people learn and grow and become better writers. And one of the ways you can do that is just simply by writing. Write a lot, read a lot, but also write a lot.
I think that's really awesome of you to do that and to spend the time to help with people, because you have your own job and you have your own responsibilities, you have your own family, and to do that, first of all, it's a labor of love for you, and second of all, it shows how generous you are and how much you care. I don't know if anyone knows this. When I first started writing a blog, I used to spam your stories, and I would put links in the comment section to all my stories. And you actually had to write me an email like Jay, we will start linking to your stories in like the Celtics links of the day, but we would really appreciate it if you would stop spamming our comment section with all your stories. You probably
I had to put on my adult, patient voice.
You probably don't even remember that. I also, one of the first things when I started writing was I emailed you for advice about how to start a blog, because you've had such a successful one and one that has lasted so long and one that has churned out all these great writers. And
sure.
So one of the first things that I did, and I'll always be thankful to you, you responded immediately and helped me. And so I will always be grateful to that. And then later, letting me really, when I was bad at writing back in the day, but you gave me a space to write, and I really appreciate that, man.
Well, it's also one of those pay it forward type of things, you know. Like I had, you talk about how early I got involved in it. So when it is just a few bloggers out there, you have a little bit of, visibility from other people. Bill Simmons was just getting started back then, and he reached out to me and said, hey, like your site, like what you're doing, hey, don't do this, do this. And he gave me some, not harsh criticism, but like definitely pointed criticism about certain things that I was doing, and they're absolutely correct. And I needed to stop doing such and such and working more on this and that. And then also, reaching out, I did a little bit of reaching out to someone like Steve Bopet, who I've always admired and always appreciated it. And he actually called me on the phone and had a long conversation with me. It was just one of the most generous things I've ever seen in the industry. And I was just enjoyed that conversation and enjoyed just the fact that he reached out to me and helped me along the way. So. It's the least I can do is to, help other people and help other bloggers and aspiring writers. I love writing. I love the process of writing. The other day I watched Finding Forrester. I just, when he gets to the part where he's like, punch the keys, I'm like, yeah. And he's talking about nerdy. I mean, this is what I do. This is what I am. So, revel in it. Why not?
I love that movie, man. That's one of my favorite movies. Going in a little bit different direction now. You've been writing for a long time about the Celtics. Do you have one article? This could be a tough question, because I know I have a lot of articles like this. Do you have one that you look back on and you're like, man, I wish I could have that take back?
Well, it's funny you should mention it. Like, I've kind of, like, as the blog has evolved, it's like, changed and it looks different through the ages, and I've done various versions of it, and along the way I've kind of done screen grabs of what the old version looked like, and kind of I have like this history page where you can look back at the old versions. And one of the old versions has a title, and I believe that the title is Blountiful, and which I was basically saying that Mark Blount is a wonderful free agent addition, and the Celtics are very lucky to be getting him. And I just look back on that, I'm like, yeah, really? But, hey, who could have known, right?
That's a tough one. I can remember I was completely against the Avery Bradley draft pick. I mean, that was back when I didn't have as much of a filter, and I probably had two strong opinions back then. And Man, I probably tortured poor Avery Bradley when the Celtics drafted him. But
well, I mean, like, you know, there's an age and maturity type thing. You know, back in the early days, my handle was Ranter, because, you know, I'd just go on these rants about the various things and, you know, slam people in the organization. And granted, when I first started writing, I was writing about Rick Pitino. So it's pretty easy to start ranting about Rick Pitino.
Yeah.
So, over the years, you kind of mellow, you kind of mature, and you kind of figure out that, you know what, with the 28th pick in the draft, you know, how much can you miss? I mean, you gamble and you do the best you can, you know, so you kind of get a little bit of perspective and things like that. So I can't remember where Avery Bradley was actually drafted, but, you know, that's neither here nor there.
I think he was 19th, so he was definitely a really good draft pick. But I didn't think so at the time, and I let everybody know it. What was your favorite Celtics team to follow ever?
Oh, man.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, I'll cop out and say the 1986 version. Of course, I was like, you know,
okay,
I was like nine at that time.
I should have eliminated 1986 for that.
No, I mean, you know, the 2008 version was, you know, just a phenomenal ride from start to end. Just, you know, from the early days of the rumblings of the Kevin Garnett rumors and things like that to actually seeing the team put together. I remember at one point around the training camp thing, I felt like I was, you know, sitting on the roof of a Ferrari trying to blog about it as the, you know, cars went whizzing by, you know.
Yeah.
It was just one big fun ride from beginning to end, and it was just a joy to experience that whole thing.
Yeah, I talked to Leon Poe about that team one time, and I was telling him the moment I realized they were going to be a special team. Obviously, you knew they were going to be a good team with Kevin Garnett, Paul Pierce, Ray Allen.
Sure.
But at the time, you didn't know Kendrick Perkins was going to be a pretty good center. You didn't know Rajon Rondo was going to be a good point guard. And you didn't know whether the bench had enough depth. So there were some questions about that team. And I remember watching their preseason opener. And they were in, like, Italy or something. And, I mean, they were overpassing like heck. And it was like the ball was just flying around. And they didn't even play that well. But just you could tell that they really wanted to make it work. And
yep,
I remember
they bought into the Mbutu.
Yeah, and I remember I told Leon, I was like, did you know that early that team was going to be special? He said, man, I knew it long before then. he said it was like that from day one. It was just the ball was flying around, and guys were just trying to make plays for each other. That really was a fun ride.
Sure.
Okay. No, take Larry Bird out of the equation. Who is your favorite Celtics player?
Larry Bird.
that you've watched during your lifetime.
Well, also Larry Bird, but let's go with Paul Pierce. And,
Paul Pierce.
You know, I put him over Kevin Garnett and you know, other greats because, you know, I feel like I grew up with Paul Pierce. You know, when I was in, you know, coming out of college, he was coming out of Kansas. When I was, you know, in my entry-level job, he was, you know, learning the ropes in his first few years in the league. When I was, you know, had a drastic career change where I made the absolute wrong decision in my career, that was right around the time when he was doing the bandage around his head in the Pacers. And, you know, when things kind of started coming together for me, it was right around the time when the big three started getting formed and things like that. You know, and I'm talking about in my personal life and my career and stuff like that. So I very much felt a kinship and a connection to his career and just when I saw him, you know, culminate with the final MVP, it was just a crowning moment for him and just a. I had an outpouring of, you know, respect and admiration for him that I will always feel connected to him and will always consider him a Celtic no matter what, you know, jersey or thing like that he's wearing at the time. So
I think I've said this before, the coolest moment to me of that championship run was it was game 7 against Cleveland and Pierce had a free throw. I think it was to put them ahead 4. And it bounced off the back rim and went up like it must have gone up like 10 feet in there. It bounced a lot higher than free throws normally sure. bounce off the rim, and it fell back through. And his smile, man, like just so much relief, so much joy. And it was like his whole career he'd been waiting for a team like that, and you could just see in his eyes like, yeah, like,
right.
I think I earned that bit of luck right there.
Oh, and I also remember one time, and I got tickets to a playoff game. Turned out to be the playoff game against the LeBron and the Cavs, where it was LeBron and Pierce going mano a mano back and forth. I love Dominique and Bird, and like I went with a friend of mine who wasn't a Celtics fan, and he was just watching me out of the corner of his eye, just like in just. I don't know if it was shock or whatever. Like, you'd see me just like flip flop from agony to ecstasy and back to agony and back to ecstasy. It was just like I was hanging on the edge of my seat and as if my life depended on every last score. And he was just laughing at me. It was a hilarious, fun moment. And then when we actually won, it was just so exhilarating. That's why we do what we do. That's why we love this sport. There's just those moments where you can just say, "I was there. I experienced that. That was wonderful." So,
yeah, exactly. That's why we watch all these games. For like you said, like I watch, I don't know how many games of basketball per year. Way too many. And you watch all the bad ones. You go through like the sloppy games against the Kings and. In January, in the dog days, you go through just horrible game after horrible game. I go to a lot of high school games. I go to college games. And it's like you watch so many bad games just for that chance that they might be great or
yeah.
that they might live up to the hype or that there's some ending that you'll never forget. And
right.
that's why we're addicts, man. That's why we're basketball addicts.
It's the best reality TV ever.
Yeah, seriously, and it always there's always another season to watch. Speaking of that, this season coming up, how much right. better do you think the Celtics are going to be?
You know, at some point it's a law of diminishing returns. You know, yes, they're going to be better. How much better can you possibly be without being a legit contender? I'm not sure. I mean. They are. I mean, if you just take the math equation of subtract Evan Turner, subtract Jared Sollinger, and add Al Horford and other bits and pieces like you know Jaylen Brown and Gerald Green and things like that, I think that's a step up. How many games better is it? I don't know. It could be two games, could be four games. But then again, in any season, there's you know 4 to 5 game swing of you know the ball bounces wrong one way. You have a bad night the other day. You know, you lose 2 games to the Nets last season. You know, do you count those as, you know, potential wins this year? I guess. But then again, do you count on the fact that you're beating the Warriors again? I don't know. So are they better in the terms of the regular season? I think so. I think they'll be a step up. Whether or not they're good enough to beat the Cavs, I don't know. Probably not. But at least they're going to be in that gymnasium. They're going to be in that discussion as a dangerous out for someone like the Cavs. So I kind of like that. And I also like being a step away, a player away, a trade away, of really being in that conversation, really being in the thick of things, depending on who we get and what it costs. But, you know, we're always kind of on that edge. We're on that bleeding edge waiting for that shoe to fall. But, yeah. You know, it's kind of fun to be there, too.
It's like as a Celtics fan, you're always there. Even when they were great, there was always the Rondo rumors or the Ray Allen rumors. There was always something.
Sure.
It's like you can't just be comfortable with the team because Danny Ainge doesn't feel comfortable at any time.
Well, and you shouldn't either. I think he went from Ray Allen, who always was tinkering with the team and trying to get better. And, you know, even as his thing was, he was always like, add another guy. Every year you got to add some piece. So whether it's, you know, I'll butcher the names if I try to go through them, but like he's always trying to add something every year, and he did a really good job of it.
Yeah. Okay. One piece the Celtics added this year with Jaylen Brown. What mm-hmm. were your thoughts on draft night when they ended up with him? Initial thoughts.
well, the initial thoughts is what everybody else is thinking. Where's the trade? You know, it's really hard when Woj is tweeting, you know, literally minutes before the pick happens that, you know, they're in serious talks with the Bulls. They're in serious talks with the Sixers, and Sixers are throwing everything but the kitchen sink at us and things like that. And then they all of it is dependent upon them drafting Chris Dunn. And then they get it, and Kamish goes up to the podium and says, Jaylen Brown. You're like, what? That wasn't supposed to happen. That wasn't part of the equation. And so I wasn't necessarily disappointed in the Jaylen Brown pick. I was a little bit initially disappointed in the fact that we weren't getting Jimmy Butler. And so you kind of let that kind of die down a little bit, and you kind of pick yourself up and say, okay, Jimmy Butler hasn't been traded yet. There's still an option to get him. Like, there's still an option to get somebody else. We still got all of our trade assets. Yes, we may have missed an opportunity to trade Chris Dunn, but at the same time, you know, who knows? If the offers that were on the table at the moment were bad ones, if there were ones where we were going to have to give away the kitchen sink in order to get someone and totally empty the cupboard, then maybe it's good that we didn't make that trade. So, it's hard to know without knowing all the details and being a fly on the wall in the Danny Ainge's office. But, you know, initially I was a little bit disappointed that it wasn't Jimmy Butler or some other big trade. But at the same time, I like the Jaylen Brown pick. I like him as a player and his potential. Obviously, he's got to follow through on it. He's got to, you know, learn the NBA game. And we have to be patient with him, let him have, you know, a year or two to kind of develop as a player before we kind of, you know, judge him or anything like that. But, yeah, you know, give him a shot and let's see how he does.
There you go. Thanks a lot for coming on, Jeff. I really appreciate you coming on. Really had a lot of fun talking with you about everything. I've always appreciated your work. I've always appreciated how much attention you pay to not just the Celtics, but your blog and the people who work for your blog. I really do admire the way you handle things over there with utmost class. There's no classier guy, people, than Jeff Clark. And
I've always admired the work ethic and the dedication that you have put into your craft in terms of getting better at what you do, and you have become one of the shining examples of what you can do with hard work and a little bit of talent, and you certainly got even more than a little bit. No, you got more than a little bit of talent, but I'm just saying that you've done what it takes, and if anybody has any questions about how do I do this, I've usually either used you or someone amongst the names that you've talked about earlier as examples of people who did it right, that did their did the hard work, did the gritty work, and worked at their craft and something of it. So very much admire what you have done, and look forward to seeing what you do in the future.
Thank you very much, man. Everybody go to CelticsBlog.com. Check out at CelticsBlog on Twitter. John Corrales, he might be a little mad at me. I'm sending people to his competitor. But everybody should go to Reds Army and Celtics Blog. There's plenty of room for both of them. And Celtics Hub and a number of other blogs. There's a lot of great blogs out there for the Celtics. Honestly, Celtics fans, so much good work going around. We appreciate you coming on, Jeff. We'll let you get back to your family now and back to your blog. Take care, man.
Yeah, thank you very much.
Okay, so we have been around for a long time, too, on Red's Army. We started the story about the initial blogging. I can confirm that blogging at the beginning was not like it is now. And now, when I want to post something, when I want to post this show, I log on to my WordPress account. It gives me this whole interface. I go in and I plug in the embed code and I write my little thing in the headline. I put a picture in. It does everything for me. Boom, publishes. But back in the day, we created these web pages on what they called a WYSIWYG editor. What you see is what you get, editor.
The WYSIWYG.
WYSIWYG editor.
Oh,
and you would create these text boxes and type in something, And I remember putting a link to read more, and I would have to create a separate web page for the full story. So when you clicked on that, it opened up a separate web page that I had to format and put the background on and put the title on and all that stuff. I don't know how we kept doing it. I really don't.
It's unreal. Like, the amount of time that used to go into that, you guys are the blogging OGs.
Dude, I used to write up a post, publish it, email the file, the actual front page file, to Chuck and say, here's our latest front page. So this way he could save it. So if Chuck had to post something before I could get to something, then, like, if there was breaking news, he would load that up, override the file that he had.
The WYSIWYG?
Was that on his editor, we used some Microsoft, like, page maker or something like that. And he would do his thing and then email me this HTML file with the new front page that I would then save. I mean, really unbelievable. Just the steps we had to take. It was basically creating fire with sticks and rope. And nowadays we got blow torches.
It's amazing you guys stuck with it. Like, you and Jeff, it's incredible how much work you guys have continued to put in year after year, when you guys, and Chuck too, you guys all have different jobs, you guys have your own lives, and you guys have just stuck with the Celtics, and you've just always wanted to give your opinions. It really is, like I said to Jeff, it's a labor of love, man. Like, you gotta really, really love the Celtics and watching them and writing about them and discussing them to even consider keeping up a website about them for as long as you guys have done it. It's really neat that all you guys have done it for so long. Crazy, kind of crazy
it's,
that you
no,
guys have
it's,
done it for so long.
Not but, to make light, awesome. Not to make light of mental illness, but there's a certain thing that's not quite right about us to keep doing this for not as a second job, as a hobby, to keep doing this for. We're going into our 11th season. 11 seasons of this. So we started before the whole KG trade. We were doing Operation Odin and Destination Durant and trying to figure out, like, we were following Ohio State games and Texas games and doing, like, recaps of those games because we were, like, trying to see where we would go. We would go first or second. We got to follow these guys so we know who we're getting. And, oh, man. I mean, I have probably unfairly to a lot of people prioritized this website over them and my relationships with them. And I don't know. I think at some point when I'm 75 or 80, hopefully I make it that long, I'll be sitting on a rocking chair somewhere and I'll look back at these times going, what the hell did I do all that for? Man, I really screwed a lot of things up. But it really is. It truly is a labor of love. Like, we truly just love talking about the Celtics and love doing that. And hey, look, it's brought us to this. It's brought us to this podcast. It's brought me and you together, Jay. It created the Rain and Jays. And you
we
know
were
what?
Destiny. We were destiny.
I'm happy to have everything happen the way it did so we could talk together as the Rain and Jays. I think it's all worthwhile.
Fate, man. It's all fate.
Whatever it is, it's been fun. And we're going to keep doing it as long as people keep listening. And we thank you for listening to these crazy shows that we keep doing. And thank you for subscribing on iTunes or Google Play or wherever it is you get your podcasts. If this is your first time, welcome to the show. Subscribe to us. Search for Locked On Celtics wherever it is that you get your podcasts or however you found us. Do that. Tell your friends. Tell your parents. Tell your sworn enemies. Maybe you'll bond together over the show and get past your differences, because we're all about peace and love here. Peace, love, and Celtics on the Rain and Jays Locked On Celtics show. And remember, download the SeatGeek app, go to the settings tab, enter the code LO Celtics to get $20 back, a $20 rebate off your first ticket purchase on the SeatGeek app. That's going to do it for our show. Thank you for listening, and we'll see you next time here on the Locked On Celtics podcast. We are part of the Locked On Podcast Network.